This is episode 44 of the Great Speech Podcast on My Keynote Speech Analyzed.
Let's go.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top. So get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up, listen up, listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. So welcome back, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I hope you are well, as I do hope every single week. This is me, Kolarele Shonaike, bringing you another episode of the Great Speech Podcast. A relatively short one, I think, this time, mainly because I'm actually about to go on holiday and I'm pretty tired. This is late at night that I'm recording this before we actually head off. And really, I'm kind of just, I need the break, right? I'm sure a lot of you guys feel the same way. It's been one of those years because of COVID and all of that, and I just need the break. So this is an episode I'm kind of cranking out just to get it out there, to be honest with you guys. I shouldn't admit that to you, but I have to be honest about it. This episode I'm gonna say it's a resumption of the last episode where I played you a keynote speech that I had given at the Bloomsbury Institute, which is I don't think it's yet a full university. I think it's working towards that, but it's an academic institution in central London. Very good one, actually. I really was impressed by the ethos that they have towards learning for their students. As I actually mentioned in the Q&A that followed the speech that I gave, my university experience was, I don't remember it as something where the university itself did a lot to kind of get me into the spirit of university. We kind of pretty much turned up and it was, there are your, you know, your courses, there are the things you have to attend, good luck. Now, I had a brilliant time at university, but that was really because of the environment, the friends that I had. There's nothing better than being on a campus university, I think. So whereas this institute, and I think maybe because of the fact that students pay fees now, it was very much more student-centered, a lot of pastoral care and things like that. So I was really very impressed with the university. It was very nice of them to invite me to speak. And so last week I played, or the last episode, I played the full speech for you. Go back and listen to it if you haven't already, because that will, you'll kind of need that to be able to make sense of the stuff that I'm going to talk to you about today, which is an analysis of the speech that I gave. I know that might seem a little bit self-centered, but I've kind of had requests for examples. So, you know, I'm sharing with you each week about different ways to be a better communicator. And I've always had requests for examples of what I've done. And I thought, you know what, let me put it out there and then let me do analysis to really identify some of the stuff that went well, some of the stuff that I wasn't as pleased with, even though overall I think it was a good speech and I've certainly had really good feedback on it. So I'm going to dive right in I'll do this in the way that I actually analyzed some of the speeches when I was doing, I think it was season 5, I analyzed a lot of great speeches. So I'll kind of give you some preamble to it, and then I'll go through some individual elements of the speech itself. So the first thing I would say is that the way I came to be invited to give the speech in itself was kind of a little bit odd, because it's an academic institution that holds a conference every year to discuss kind of very high level themes. So this year the theme was interaction and identity. And the reason I say it was a bit strange I kind of was invited is that that isn't a topic that you would really think that I would be asked to speak on. I am usually asked to speak on issues of leadership because I do a lot of leadership development. Obviously asked on communication, that's a very big one. I also do a lot of speaking on diversity and inclusion and topics related to minority and black minority issues. So identity and interaction, it doesn't leap off the page as something that I would be asked to speak on. So the way, in fact, I came to be asked was because one of the lecturers at this university, a law lecturer, had in fact witnessed me giving a speech back in 2013 at the Google campus and remembered the speech I gave then and also a little bit of interaction that we had. I kind of encouraged us to stick with law, basically, and she did actually took that to heart. So she recommended me to the Institute when they were looking for speakers for this year's conference. And I think they actually wanted to kind of shake things up a little bit by having someone who wasn't necessarily an academic, but nevertheless to speak to the issues of the theme. So that's how I came to be asked. The organizer told me, actually, really frankly, that once he had been given my name, he went to consume all my stuff. So he became an avid podcast listener. If you're listening to this, Tom, thank you again for inviting me. I really enjoyed it. He read a lot of my stuff, which is great. So I love that as an approach because, you know, he didn't just take a recommendation and go with it. He actually wanted to learn and find out whether this person would be worthwhile, be a worthwhile addition to their kind of roster of speakers. So he did his research, decided that, yes, I would be able to speak to this issue. But in truth, when the request came to me saying we'd like you to speak on the theme of interaction and identity, and I looked at the program for the event, my honest first impression was I didn't really get it. And by that, I mean, I didn't really get why they wanted me to speak. I know there was a recommendation, but nevertheless, what do I do that speaks to that issue? And so I actually reached out. I reached out to the organizer and said, hey, thanks for the invite. What is it about me that makes you think I could speak to this issue? Now, I'm starting with this issue first on this episode of Analysis because it's actually a very important thing that I advise all of my clients when having the opportunity to speak, to be sure to speak to issues and things that you actually know you can give value on. And if you're not certain, either don't do it or, which is the step that I took, find out what value would be for them and then see whether you can speak to that. And so I reached out to the organizer to ask that very question. And in fact, I've got the email that I sent. So part of it says, I do have a query about the topic. From the theme of identity in the future of higher education, that was the theme, there are probably a wide range of topics that could be covered. From my background and focus, which I hope you've seen, here's my LinkedIn profile, just in case. Is there any particular angle or topic you think would be of most value to the audience? So in code, that's me saying, huh? What, you want me to speak about what? But to be fair to them, they replied and actually did give some examples of things that, looking at my background, they thought that I could speak to. But again, essentially said, but to be honest, we love what you do. We think you're the expert. So run with it. It's an open theme. It's not over-defined. So you can kind of bend it to your will. And I like that as a response. I liked the fact that they were really open and gave me the freedom and the kind of the bandwidth to come up with something that I thought might be of value. So I decided to go for it. I actually, so well, I before I decided to go for it, I actually ran it by a mastermind group that I am part of. It's kind of a group of guys that we meet every Thursday online. We actually started in COVID, and we meet every Thursday online to discuss issues. It could be a challenge or a problem that one of us is facing. We kind of group think it, or it could just be a topic of interest. And again, we'll debate it and talk about it. It could be a book that we've read and discussed. One of the best things I ever did during lockdown, by the way, I really encourage you to do that if you haven't already, to join or create a mastermind group of other like-minded. That doesn't mean everybody thinks the same, but it means that you all have the same ethos, I guess. And just that experience of having a sounding board to run things by with other people that you trust, that are willing to be vulnerable and unwilling to give you advice, is a wonderful thing. So I ran the topic by my mastermind group, kind of asking, look, should I do this? Will I be able to speak to it? And got some really great thoughts and ideas from that mastermind group on how I could speak to it. So I decided to go for it. Now, I know it's a bit of a long-winded way of saying I did do the speech, but I kind of think that it's important as speakers that we are alive to the question of what are we being asked to speak to and can we do it justice? The other thing that I did, and again, I'm using this as an example of what I did to show that this is what you should do with your own public speaking in particular, was I asked about the audience. And that was really important because the audience is basically who is going to consume your speech, which means you need to know who they are, where they come from, because otherwise it's going to be impossible for you to give a speech that is of value to them. So I asked who the audience was, and they explained it was largely academics and professionals and students, but it sounded like quite heavy emphasis on the academics. And that was important to know because it meant that I couldn't, or it wouldn't be wise to give a speech that kind of was a superficial. I mean, I try not to give superficial speeches, but it was one where what they would want was a real examination of the issues in some depth and, you know, kind of a rich examination of the issues rather than touching on it and being more workshoppy kind of style. It really felt as an event that it was, let's debate and discuss ideas like a university, where it's not necessarily about the answers. It's more about exploring the issues and asking great questions. So that was the spirit in which I approached the speech. It would be really just kind of looking and exploring the issue from my point of view. Which still left me with the problem of what do I speak to? What do I, you know, interaction and identity is the theme, but how do I make that actually work? And in all honesty, I struggled, partly because I really had a lot on. It's kind of one of the reasons we need to go on holiday, is I really just had a lot on. And my brain has kind of been a little bit fried. I've gotten a bit brain dead. So the combination of my brain being tired, a lot of work on, and the theme not being one that was obviously in my zone for speaking, meant that I just struggled. So I'd been given, you know, I think about a month in advance they'd asked me or something like that. But in truth, it wasn't until the week of the speech itself that I actually settled on what I was going to talk about. And this is why I'm analyzing this speech, because you should not do that. Okay, and I know this is an example of me not practicing what I preach, but hey, we're all only human. But the later you leave it to actually work out what you're going to say, the less time you leave to work out and practice how you are going to say it. So I kind of kicked myself a little bit in just not getting on with the job of preparing for the speech early enough. So I had long enough to work out what I was going to say and then long enough to practice how I was going to say it. So do not do that at home. That is just bad practice. But nevertheless, that is what happened. It really was only the week of it. I mean, I kind of put it in the back of my mind, but the speech was on a Friday. And okay, this is going to be terrible. It wasn't until Wednesday night that I actually settled on exactly what I was going to be talking about. But there's a reason for that. So I had been mulling in my mind that through interaction and identity, I was going to weave through kind of my personal life story and the idea of what it means, what identity means to someone who is of an ethnic minority. I'm black African in England. And it seemed to me that actually, given my background, that would be a good theme that I could speak to in some depth. So that was what was playing in my mind. But I was struggling with what was my opening or what was my entry point to it, even if it wouldn't be the opening line or anything. You know, what would the theme be that would make it hang all together? And if you've listened to one of the episodes of this season, you'll have heard me talk about the importance of identifying or settling on a theme for your speech. Because once you have a theme, it really, really can make everything else make sense and hang together strongly. A theme is a really powerful thing. I gave the example of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream. You know, once you have that idea of, okay, the theme is I Have a Dream, you can kind of speak to so many things around that idea. So I was struggling with exactly the theme, but I knew I wanted to talk in some way about identity from my point of view with my life story. So during this period, the European Cup, the Euros, football Euros, European Championships were on, and England were doing pretty well. So the reason, in fact, that I didn't settle on exactly how I would approach the speech until the Wednesday night is because on Wednesday evening, England were playing in the semi-finals of the European Championship. And I had realized that if they won, that would mean they would still be in the competition by the Friday that I was giving the speech. And so on that Friday, I would be able to use the whole concept or the idea of the theme of England and football as part of the speech, because it would still be relevant because they were still in the competition. It's not good, because if they'd gone out, I'm actually not sure how I would have approached it. So I was really watching kind of, you know, like, oh gosh, I hope they win so that I actually, the idea that I have for the speech will work. They did win. So from Wednesday night, I actually got to the hard work of really working out what I was going to say. The advantage, however, is that because I had a theme, actually, I was able to write it pretty quickly myself. And the theme that I used was really centered around so if you follow English football, maybe even if you don't, but if you follow football, there is a song that was written for kind of the English football team, gosh, I don't know, 30 years ago or something, called It's Coming Home. Which is the idea that football was invented in England. And so when they win the World Cup or the European Championship, they will be bringing football home to where it belongs. That's a slightly odd, maybe slightly entitled view of football. But nevertheless, that's the song. And it's a very, very popular song. Even my kids sing, it's coming home, it's coming home. Everyone sings it in the country. And during the European final itself, when the team was doing well, of course, it was extremely popular and, you know, went up the charts again. So I thought, actually, that's a great intro, because I could use the question of where is home for me Where is home for somebody who is a football supporter but struggles to support England, even though technically it's the place where I live and the place I'm a citizen of. But many ethnic minorities have this sense of fractured identity, especially when it comes to supporting sports teams. And I knew that would be a really good theme and entry point for the speech, in particular because I had a lot of respect for the England manager, and he had written a quite brilliant letter. I'll link to it in the show notes, actually. A quite brilliant letter called, open letter, called Dear England. It was kind of his letter to the country about how he had great love and respect for this group of England football players, because they weren't just playing football. They were actually standing up for things they believed in, like diversity and inclusion. And he really respected the fact that these young players were taking that stand. It was a really courageous letter and statement, because typically England managers, or sports team managers generally, are the ones that say, no, this is all about the sport and I don't want to bring politics into it, and we're not role models, we're just here to play the game. Whereas he actually went the opposite way. So I had a lot of respect for that. And I knew, having read the letter, that parts of it would be great as the kind of conclusion to the speech itself. So that was the theme. Needed them to win on the Wednesday. They did win on the Wednesday. And then I got to preparing the speech itself. And I settled on really the opening proper of the speech, which is the question, is it coming home? And what does that mean for me as an ethnic minority in England? Now, I say that I settled on that as an opening. Here is a part of the speech that I didn't like, which is, I always advise my clients and anyone I kind of train in public speaking presentations that you should always start strong. So just start your speech into the content without too much preamble. Hello, I'm happy to be here. Nice to see you. All of that. Because all of that actually is really not for the audience's benefit. It's more for your benefit to kind of make you feel warmed up and stuff. But that actually undermines the impact that you have, where if you start immediately into the issues, you will have your audience's attention right from the start. I didn't do that. I should have started my speech proper from the question of, you know, is it coming home? What does that mean? But I didn't. I started with a little joke about how, you know, because this was my first speech since COVID, first in-person speech since COVID, it was really nice to wear trousers again. Yeah, I got a laugh, but to be honest, it was weak, in my humble opinion. I should really just have started the speech proper. So that again is a part of it that I wasn't too happy with. And if you listen to the speech, you'll see me do it. Or if you watch it, you'll see me do it. And so just have that in your ears that I wasn't happy with myself for doing that. It was a little bit of a cop out. I wish I just launched into the speech proper, so that from the first second, I had people's attention where I wanted them. But after I'd done that week opening, I got into the speech. And I was actually really pleased with it, because I could tell, not least because the whole is it coming home thing was such a big thing at that time, just that particular time. It was after the semi-final, but before the final, that England would actually go on to lose. So it was in that sweet spot of hope that the country had, that maybe this would be the time that England would win. So asking that question really worked well, especially because I think they probably were wondering, would I give a highly academic speech, seeing as it was an institute and I'm speaking to academics? How would this non-academic person approach this question? And so coming at it from that angle, I think surprised people, and I intrigued them as to, okay, where's he going with this? And I like that as an opening. I think an opening where people feel intrigued and therefore engaged is very good and very, it's a very good way to approach it. So I launched into the speech and, you know, you can listen to it and you'll hear me explore issues of interaction and identity. And I kind of focused on, I would say, four elements from my life. So the first was obviously my identity as a black man in a predominantly white country and what that meant for identity and how I interacted with people. How identity plays a big part in law, even though you wouldn't necessarily think it. How identity is a big part of communication, the communication skills work that I do, in particular people kind of taking on an identity of who they think they are or should be and communicating in that way. And very often my work is involved in breaking that mindset, which is often self-limiting. I also talked about my work with the 100 Black Men of London, which, as many of you will know, having listened to me a little bit by now, is kind of one of the most important pieces of work that I've done in my life. And I also weaved in kind of university experience as well, because they really wanted this to speak or touch in some way on the higher education kind of industry. So those were the four things that I weaved through the speech, and I try to vary it between anecdotes and stories. And if you've heard me say anything at all, you will know that storytelling is so, so important. And I try to weave that in. I was really pleased with the story that I told of, which is a real life experience of a judge who had basically shouted at me for suggesting that the angry black woman syndrome actually existed. And that was quite an amusing one. And I got kind of a laugh from that as well. So I felt it kind of flowed well. I liked the way that I was able to move from one area to another, but still make it all feel linked. And I try to get into kind of richer, more complex ideas of identity so that these academics would actually be intrigued to listen, even if it wasn't the most academic of talks. So when I say academic, right, the speaker before me had been brilliant, but she was a neuroscientist talking about how the brain worked and explaining how our brains make connections and the myoglobin and all these kind of really technical terms to help people understand how the brain works, which obviously plays a big part into identity as well. So that's what had followed. That's what I followed. And as I was listening, I think my wife actually texted me through the speech, through the previous speech, just saying, hey, good luck, you know, hope it goes well. And I texted back, hope it goes well. Gosh, the speech before me is really great and it's really academic. And she, being my wife, texted really kind of positive message, said, it doesn't matter, you're going to be great and all of that. So that's kind of, I'm giving you that because I really try to make the speech delve into issues, not necessarily providing answers, but really just exploring the questions in a deeper way. Another mistake that I'm the same mistake that I made, but that when I look at it, I think, I'm a bit of a speech purist, as you guys know, and I just wasn't quite happy with it. So there is a thing called the rule of three in speech making, and it basically means that our brains respond well to things put in threes. That's not just a rule of speech making, it's just generally. So that's why you'll have the good, the bad, the ugly, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, I came, I saw, I conquered. Very often things put in threes just feel satisfying to the brain. It's called the rule of three, and it works very well in speeches. I often advise clients or people who are giving speeches, if they want to make a point and then support it, make sure you support it with three good points. Or make sure you make three big points. You know, but the rule of threes works very well. And there are a couple of times where I I only put two things or said two things where I really should have said three. You know, nobody would notice, right? But it just bugged me afterwards. So I talked about how English Italians will support Italy, not England, in the European final. English Indians will support India, not England, in the Cricket World Cup. And I should have had a third thing, third example of that people being English or British citizens, but of a different heritage, will support the team of their heritage. And I just didn't. I don't know why. I think I thought about it, and I think probably because I'd left it too late, I forgot to think of the third thing. So that part bugged me. And there was another part where I was talking about the Windrush generation and how they had given their lives to this country, in this country. So you've got to this country, that's one. In this country, that's two. And I should have added another thing that would have said, and by this country, that they've been let down by this country. Windrush generation are people who came over on boats from Jamaica to, or the Caribbean to England, ostensibly the Windrush ship. And then kind of decades later, they've been treated as non-citizens, even though they were guaranteed citizenship if they came over. So that was a big scandal here. But anyway, the more important thing is that I should have put it in three. So it should have said to this country, in this country, and something to by this country. And I just didn't. And so when I watched the speech back, I was kind of shouting at the screen saying, where's your third thing? So if you want to give great speeches and you want to make various points, if you can put it in threes, works really, really well. It gives it a very good balance, and the brain kind of is almost anticipating the third thing. And if you don't give it to them, it can kind of feel that they've missed something. So that was another thing that I just didn't do as well as I should. But hey, let's not be too down on ourselves. Well, in fact, I'll tell you what, let me not be too down on myself. I'll give you a different example where I did do something well, which is the date reference I gave. So the speech was given on the 9th of July, 2021. And one of the things I often do, and I really advise you to do this as well if you've got a speech to give, is to go onto Wikipedia and type in the date of your speech. So in this case, the 9th of July. Go into Wikipedia, type in the 9th of July, or any date, and you will get a massive long list of things that happened on that date in history. Battles that were won, people that were born, people that died, people that won championships, whatever it is, but a long, long list of things that happened. And I did that for this exercise, and I found that on the 9th of July, 88, I can't remember it now. But anyway, on the 9th of July, sometime in the 19th century, the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was signed on that day, guaranteeing full kind of citizenship rights to black people in America. That was really, really good reference, because I then weaved it in that despite having been granted that freedom back then, or that citizenship back then, black people in America were still struggling to be full parts of the country. And that played into my overall theme of people's sense of identity in the country where they are a minority. So that was a good thing. I was really pleased, actually, when I was going through the dates and I saw a lot of things like, no, that's not so good. And I saw one or two that I thought I could weave that in, but that's kind of forcing it. And then that one came up. I was like, perfect. Excellent. That was great. So that was a good thing. One other good thing, but I have to say, gosh, this is terrible to admit, completely accidental. Which is the pace at which I spoke. So many people have remarked when they've watched it, because it's on YouTube now and I posted it and I've shared it on my LinkedIn and things like that, and various people have watched it. And many people have remarked at how they loved the pace at which I spoke, because it was quite, not that it was slow, but it was deliberate. It wasn't rushed. I took my time with it. And that, I think, lent it a sense of gravitas and authority. So a lot of people have really commented on that. And I'm going to tell you, that was completely accidental. It's not that I rush speeches anyway, because I do try and speak kind of more deliberately and give it a sense of authority when I speak. But the reason it was completely accidental is because, in truth, I was meant to speak for 40 minutes. So I had an hour slot, 40 minutes me speaking, 20 minutes Q&A at the end. So 40 minutes speaking. When I actually had kind of done my bullet point notes, and I thought, let me do a run through of the speech in practice. So I did one, I think, on the Thursday, you know, afternoon, you know, when I'd worked out what I was going to say. When I did my run through, I kind of finished in about 20 minutes. And I thought, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm literally speaking for half the time that they wanted me to. And I thought, oh, come on, they're going to feel so cheated. So I kind of then spent a lot of time working on beefing the speech up, adding things that I thought, oh, I don't need to speak on that. I thought, no, I better do, because that gives me another few seconds, you know, maybe another minute here and there. And then one of the other things that I realized I would do was literally just speak slower. This is terrible. Gosh, they'll never hire me again. But I literally just thought, okay, I'm going to speak slower, because that actually will, you know, if you've got a 20-minute speech, you speak slower and, you know, allow for applause and a little bit of ad lib, that will give you another 5, 6, 7 minutes, which then takes it up towards half an hour. And then I thought, actually, what I would do is I would say, no, you know what? Actually, I think the Q&A will be more important here. So let's extend the Q&A. So the reason I spoke it's kind of slower than I might have is literally because I was trying to eke out the time. I got to be honest with you guys. Oh, will anybody ever work with me again? But accidentally, that ended up being one of the real positives of the speech in terms of my delivery. And how you deliver a speech really is just as important as the content of the speech itself. You know, you've really got to think about that the words that you say are important, but they won't land or resonate or connect if you don't deliver them in a way that makes people feel connected to it. And actually, one of the things I think was strongest in the speech was how I delivered it. I really did actually, because I was trying to eke it out, take my time with it. I've worked very hard over many, many years on being natural and authentic in how I speak. So how I speak when I give a speech generally tends to be how I just speak. That's taken me a long time to get to. It's what I advise my clients on now, but it's taken me a long time to kind of be able to do that. And in a way, speaking slower helped me do that even more. So if you listen to the speech and you find yourself happy with the pace at which I take it, just know that it wouldn't necessarily have been that way if I had taken more time to prepare the speech, so I had more content, which would probably have meant that I went through it a bit quicker than I ended up doing. Yep, there we are. That's the realities of giving speeches. Sometimes everything is perfect. Sometimes everything is terrible, but you make it work. And in this case, it ended up being kind of a good outcome. So I gave the speech. It went really well. It was one of those, it was a little bit of a shame because they still had COVID restrictions in place. They were hoping that all of them would be lifted, but they weren't. So the room, which I'd been told would actually normally be kind of packed full, really wasn't. It was kind of half full. And that's one of those things that when you're watching it back on video, for instance, and you can see empty seats, it's a little bit like, oh, that's a shame. You know, it looks like it's half empty. But actually, it was kind of good numbers in the room itself. And they responded to it really, really well, which was nice. It was heartwarming. There's a good contingent of Nigerians in the back, and they kind of made a lot of noise, which is good. Always kind of have your home crowd there cheering you on. But generally, it seemed to be well received. I was glad that I didn't give an academic speech as such, but I gave enough, I think, kind of richness to the exploration of the issues that even academics could enjoy it and get something of value out of it. In fact, the message I got afterwards seemed to be that, yes, although that wasn't academically, you know, inclined, you know, neuroscientific research kind of thing, but it nevertheless made them think deeply, which was why they had chosen someone who was from outside the academic field. There was a Q&A that followed afterwards. Again, that went really well. That I found that kind of very easy as well, mainly because it was because the topic, once I'd worked it out, I was really comfortable because it really was talking about my view of the world. The questions that were asked really played into that, and I was able to answer them well. And at the end, I got kind of, you know, good applause for my speech, but the end of the Q&A, which was really the formal end of everything, I got a standing ovation, which is wonderful. Really, really wonderful, actually. I have to say, it was heartwarming. You know, you spent so much time on Zoom and things like that. It was really nice to actually just have people in front of you and people evidently enjoying what you had said and how you had said it. Ended up being, I think, a well-received speech. I have revealed some of the challenges and difficulties and flaws in the whole thing, which I hope helps you or gives you confidence that you don't have to be perfect to still deliver a speech that has impact on people. One of the things I always emphasize. I hope that some of this, in terms of how I have approached things, will help you work out how you are going to approach your speech without worrying about perfection, just focusing on saying something that is of value to the people you are addressing. And if you can give value, then they will appreciate it and will not worry about any imperfections that you may have displayed along the way. So there we are. Hope you guys kind of, you know, I don't know if it's weird analyzing your own speech, but it just seemed like the right thing to do, given that I had played the speech in the previous episode. So go back and listen to that speech. Maybe listen to it now. And then with kind of my analysis ringing in your ears, and then you'll kind of listen to it with different eyes on. In fact, I say that as an example, because I've been listening to great podcast called The Delta Flyers. For any Trekkies of you out there, if you ever watch Star Trek Voyager series, which was actually a really good one, two of the actors in there did a podcast where they go through each episode. So every week is a different episode of the series. They're like seven series or something. So they've got a long way to go. And they kind of talk about the episode, remembering, you know, things that have happened, doing an analysis of the direction and the dialogue and their own acting. And it's a really enjoyable thing to listen to that first and then watch the episode. You get so much more out of it. So I'm hoping that listening to this episode with my analysis of my speech, you will then get a little bit more out of the speech than you might have done if you just listened to it all the way through. But who knows? I don't know. As always, do hit me up with a review. I always read out reviews whenever they come in. Oh, I discovered that the last review I got, which was the title of the person was Okaros, I have just discovered it was a lady called Ross, who's in fact a client. So thank you, Ross, for your review, now that I know who it was from and know your name. So there we go. That's it for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed. Hope you found it useful. I'm going to have a little break now, so I'll probably be back in a month or something. I'll continue the, you know, how to give a great speech and move on to kind of different topic areas that I think you should think about when you're working out your own great speech. But for now, I need a break. I'm tired. Hope you found this episode useful. As always, I shall leave you with a goodbye in a different language. I do not know or remember whether I have done this language before. If I have, my apologies. If I haven't, lucky me. It is arrivederci, arrivederci, which of course is goodbye in Italian. Arrivederci, see you on the next episode.